Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell, Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser, we are taking your thoughts on the Tennessee Titans and the NFL Draft. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Weston to the program. Weston, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, guys. Just wanted to point this out real quick. I mean, I know we're talking about how last year the offensive line was atrocious, but previous years when we had our old offensive line coach, we had a great O-line. I mean, Henry was able to run for over 2,000 yards. I mean, you look at the stats there, and we did have a good O-line there for a long time when LaJuan was here, et cetera, et cetera. Well, when he left to go, I forget where he went, but he went to a different team. And then you struggled last year because you didn't just have the talent. You didn't have a guy that could really coach him up the way they were supposed to be. So now that Bill Callahan has come in, I'm okay if we may go a different route than go all at seven, because you have Bill Callahan, who has had the track record to coach up O-linemen, and maybe sit back and get a guy. Maybe if you can somehow finesse a trade to get a third-round pick this year, that would be great, and trade back and get a third and go that route. But I think we could do it without having to pick at seven. Thanks, guys.
Yep, thanks for the call, Weston. I mean, we've talked about that with like, how does Bill Callahan factor into all this? Are there offensive linemen later in the draft, be that later in the first round, be that in the second round, regardless, are there tackles that Bill Callahan has identified that says, yep, we can draft somebody there, I can work with that, and I can work with that to the level where they can be a legitimate starter for us in this league? Maybe that is the route that the Titans go. I mean, look, you can't ignore the spot entirely. Like, there are limitations to coaching. I mean, right now, the Titans don't have a left tackle. So, as good of a coach as Bill Callahan is, they do not have a left tackle. So, that will be a problem for Bill Callahan or anybody else.
Yeah, that'd be a neat trick to still make it work with no left tackle.
Right, exactly.
Did I hear that right? Did Weston lament the loss of Keith Carter?
I think so.
Is that what we're – yeah. I mean, that's the funny thing is, you know, you talk about coaching. You think about Keith Carter, he was absolutely embattled. And then all of a sudden he was celebrated because they had one of the best offensive lines of football. And then, you know, then you get embattled again when all of a sudden LaJuan has, you know, he gets hurt again, and basically the knee, you know, won't hold up for him. But
I don't think players liked him very much either.
Well, I'll tell you one guy who, and he talked about it eventually, but like initially Taylor LaJuan did not like him at all. And was visibly like, even in like, drills where media was there, like LaJuan was basically just like ignoring him and stuff. It's like, oh boy, this doesn't seem good.
Yeah,
he was intense at Keith Carter. But the bottom line is the Titans used to have a good offensive line, and then the last 2 years they didn't have a left tackle and they had a bad offensive line. Even when Derek, let's again remember to separate the two jobs. I think the Titans as a run blocking offensive line have been pretty good for the most part. Better some years than others, and still pretty good. I mean, you know, I think it was hard for Derrick Henry to find room, but that had to do with the passing game failures too, right? But as a pass protecting offensive line, the last 2 years, it's been atrocious.
Yes.
Absolutely awful. And as a pass protecting offensive line, you again, when they got going in 19, when they were, before LaJuan got hurt in 20, they were up there among the best in the league. Again, look at the pass protection numbers beyond the sacks and stuff like that. They were excellent. They were very, very good for the most part from 2016 through 2020, and then it started to go the wrong way on them. Again, a lot to do with just the left tackle faltering. So, yeah, the Bill Callahan thing, you obviously, big picture, you hope that makes a big difference. Let's also remember that in Cleveland, he had a lot of success. He had a bunch of high-level players playing for him too, like high picks and highly paid guys in some cases. You got to have talent. And I mean, Brian Callahan has said that too. We were asking him about kind of like the Bill Callahan effect in Indy, and, you know, again, kind of went into the whole, yeah, you know, basically what you just said. Coaching is can make a big difference, but you got to have players.
Derek in Nolensville said, fans need to realize that Callahan is a good coach, not Jesus. This is from Derek in Nolensville on the text line. The one part where I give the Bill Callahan stuff some credence in terms of draft decisions for the Titans is like, what if you're looking at this crop of left tackles and you don't view it as like, well, it's Joe Alt and then four notches down is everybody else. Like, that's the one thing I view it as. Like, if you're Bill Callahan, are you in Rand Carthon's ear? Are you in Brian Callahan's ear? And you say, look, guys, if you get the opportunity to trade back and acquire more picks, there are two or three guys that I've identified in this draft that I feel pretty confident that I can work with, and not just work with to pass and work with to be a competent, good starting left tackle in this league. If that's the case, then I think that does give you some more options and some freedom if you're Carthon making a decision. And if you're approached with an offer that you love and you have confidence that Bill Callahan can work with who you select a little bit later in the draft, then I think you're probably more willing to do it. If Bill Callahan approaches you and says, yeah, Joe Alt's pretty darn good and there's a big gap between him and everybody else, then I think the trade back option starts to become a little less realistic at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, Cam says if Alt neighbors are gone by 7, then the Titans have to trade back, try to get more day 2 picks, trade back somewhere to 10 to 15.
What if they can't?
Exactly. So, again, Cam, it's like, okay, then who in between 10 and 15 has to get to 7 and why? That's what, you know, you can't just say, hey, we're taking your spot. Yeah, we're trading back. You move out of there. Yeah. Give us some picks. Yeah, you're picking 7 now. Thank you.
Now, that would be an interesting scenario, though. If neighbors and Alt are both gone by the time 7 rolls around, well, who's still left? Like, I mean, one of Harrison would have to be left, or Adunze would have to be left, or somebody.
Well, that scenario certainly is not the 4 QB scenario.
No.
So, I mean, it was possible.
Drake May.
Yeah, Drake May really adds plummeting. God.
Yeah, Will Levis, QB1. Drake May, QB2. Rudolph, 3.
Yeah, there you go. I like it. Why not?
You wouldn't believe the depth the Titans have at quarterback now. My goodness.
Malik Willis, QB4.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think here. Yeah, Alt and Neighbors both gone. That's unlikely. I know Jared threw out the scenario of, like, Neighbors being there. Alt gone, Neighbors there, and then you're trying to basically swap spots with 8 and say, we're going to take Neighbors. If you want them, you got to come, you know. Like,
well,
basically,
I could see Neighbors,
you know,
and Alt.
Like that.
I could see Neighbors and Alt both being gone if there's 3 quarterbacks taken and only 3. Like, if there's only
– yeah.
Everybody just assumes there's going to be 4 that are taken now, either before the Titans pick or – yeah, I guess trading up to the Titans to use it there. But what if it's just 3, and then you've got Harrison, let's say the Chargers take Alt, and the Giants take Neighbors. Well, then you've got Adunze sitting there.
Yeah, then you still have one of the top receivers,
yeah,
even with the 3 QB.
So I'm just saying, like, in that situation, Neighbors and Alt would be gone.
Yeah, yeah,
and you
yeah.
just take Adunze.
Yeah, or you could
Dallas
try.
Turner or trade back.
Or, yeah, like, if there is someone in that scenario who really wants a Dunze, you know, sure, if you can figure it out, if somebody wants to get in there, then great. But, you can't just do it. You have to have someone who is really motivated to get to 7.
Well, and it also goes back to this, too, and this is the part that I keep struggling with. Like, I understand the desire from some Titans fans to trade back and to get more picks. Like, I understand the idea of wanting more picks. But I still keep coming back to, Joe, if you believe that there's a handful of elite players that are in this draft, and I'm talking super elite, and you've got the opportunity to pick one of them at number 7 overall, really regardless of where it is in terms of the position, like, I think I'm more in the business of adding elite players than I am worried about the quantity of players that you're getting. Like, if you're telling me right now you've got a chance to get one of the 5 best players in this draft or one of the 7 best players in this draft, and you feel really good about it, I'm still kind of leaning more towards that than I am the accumulation of picks.
Yeah, but I agree. So, but like the Joe Alt, again, talking to Brugler, you know, it's not like he's elite. Like,
sure,
this is going to be one of the great left tackles that we've seen in the, you know, in the 2020s and 2030s. So I still think the certainty, the apparent certainty that he's going to be good, it's still really valuable. because you can, you know, there's going to be, again, there's going to be misses all over this first round. But he doesn't really fit that, you know. So, I mean, you could make the case, okay, well, if he's good, that's great. But, yeah, if you can get more picks, I mean, this roster needs so much work, right? And why not try to do that? I mean, how many elite – if he's not elite, if he's the best, clearly the best offensive lineman, but he's not elite, who is, you know?
Exactly.
Take the quarterbacks, everybody – puts them at the top of the draft.
Be one of the receivers.
And then you give the receiver. Yeah, well. Yeah.
Which I'm still not opposed to, by the way.
I'm with you.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on the Titans and the NFL draft coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Omaha Storm Chasers at First Horizon Park. Pregame at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35, with coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball and 94.9 The Fan presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Taking your thoughts on the Titans and the NFL Draft, 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Cam on the text line says Patrick Paul or Tyler Guyton would be potential guys if they draft anything but offensive tackle in round one. If they did go the receiver route in round one, it would be really interesting. Like, obviously, you're not getting Joe Alt at that point. So if you took one of the elite guys like Neighbors or Adunze, in round two, could a Patrick Paul, a Guyton, whoever, I don't know if Guyton's going to make it down that far to 38, but could they be guys that are plug-and-play starters that you feel good about? Like, it's one thing to draft somebody, Joe, and to think, well, yeah, we could probably get him ready to play. It's another thing to draft somebody and feel really good about their readiness to step in right away and be an effective NFL starter for you. And how deep does the offensive tackle draft go where that's the case, where you feel good about them stepping in and being a solid day one starter for you? That would be my question. Everybody talks about how deep this draft is for tackle and receiver, but like, what does that mean? Like, how deep does it go where you're like, yeah, that guy can step in and play immediately and not just play, can play well?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that that's and I don't think that's the most important thing. I mean, it's more important. Like, again, early in the draft, I thought maybe – I don't think this anymore, but maybe like a Fashanu, like in 2-3 years might be better than an Alt. Yeah, he could be. I mean, Fashanu may be a Hall of Famer and Alt may not be all that good, but – early in the draft, it was like, wait a minute. So is Fashanu just like young and it's going to come together for him? But maybe early on it might be a little rough. But you know, I mean, it seems like Fashanu would be a guy who you would plug in there. I don't know. That's a good question. I feel like the thing is, it also depends on your own depth chart. So I feel like any of these guys probably get a chance to start because they're the best option. But if it's rough, then okay, well then you still haven't really helped your situation much.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I have no doubt that you could find somebody in the second round as a rookie to come in and play left tackle that's well better suited than anybody they got. But that's not what I'm looking for if I'm a Titans fan. Like, that's not the bar of what I'm shooting for, is to be better than this group that they've currently got on their roster.
Right. And again, different GM and everything, but they had a first-round tackle who, yeah, obviously had all kinds of issues. It's a little different, but they also had a second-round tackle the next year who, you know, just wasn't good enough to really put on the field at all, and they had a need. They had needs for those guys, and they had opportunity for those guys, but they just couldn't do it. So you can easily come away with a tackle here that just – isn't ready and then won't be ready. I mean, there's going to be a couple of these guys who just don't work out. So but to the question of like immediate impact plug and play, I mean, it might just be like Alt, where you really feel like, you know, go right in. Fashanu seems to me like, I mean, Fashanu is definitely a left tackle and he's played at a high level.
Yep.
So I guess it's probably those two. And then after that, I mean, I just don't know. Probably not. You're probably either going to wait a little bit, or you're going to, and you're going to, you know, just ham and egg it with veterans, which won't be good based on the roster at this point, or you're just going to have to live with some real rough rookie stuff.
Well, another thing is, how do they view Latham, right? Because Latham played right tackle at Alabama. There's talk of, like, could he move to left at the NFL? We had, you know, Brugler on talking about, if you, it kind of depends on what you're looking for at the tackle position. He called Latham the strongest player in the draft, like the strongest left tackle, or excuse me, strongest tackle in the draft. So do you feel good if you're Bill Callahan, Brian Callahan, do you feel like he could play the left side? Because I do think the left side is important in all this. Like, I understand they need both, but, like, to me, if you're drafting a tackle that high at number 7, or even if you trade back to like 10 or 11, like, I think you prefer it to be a left tackle at that point. So, like,
As long as you have a right-handed quarterback.
Yeah, like, I'm not totally opposed. Like, if they felt like Latham, let's say they moved back and they got Latham at like 11. And they said, you know what, we moved back, we acquired more draft capital, and we felt like at 11 he's the best player on the board, and we took it. If he played right tackle, would it be the end of the world? No, but then the question still lies of, okay, well, that's good, but where are you getting your left tackle, and how good is that left tackle going to be? So right. The Latham part of this is really interesting. How confident are they and anybody else that he could move over to the left side?
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of talk of that, you know. I mean, I've seen a wide range with Latham too. Some people love him without question, but, you know, there's, like, I mean, I've seen film breakdowns where, you know, you can, you know, there's some good stuff, and there's some, and again, you can do that with anything. Like, Malik Willis is the ultimate, like, you want to put together the good film of Malik Willis from Liberty, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know? And then there was also, like, you could string together 10 plays that make you kind of see what has happened. Yeah. You know?
Andrew on the text line, is alt versus fash new as simple as high floor versus higher ceiling? This is from Andrew on the text.
Like I said, I kind of looked at it that way, but I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I mean, I do think higher floor. I think higher floor with alt. I think that, like, you just have a little bit more certainty and a little bit more readiness right now. But I think ceiling wise, it's probably pretty similar based on everything that I've seen. And early on, that was kind of my thought. Like, okay, so FSU maybe not quite ready, hasn't put it all together yet. But, I mean, my concern with FSU is, like, the – and, again, hearing Maddich say this on Jared's show, but also you read, like, Dane's breakdown, the anchoring, you know, the anchoring issues against power rushers, because that, to me, makes me think of Dillard. Dillard, great athleticism, length, all that stuff. He just got bowled over. When I hear that, you know, I guess you get flashbacks of what just happened on the field for the Titans.
I thought you were about to go into, like, your concern being Kenny Pickett baby hands on Fashanu again.
Yeah.
We'll get back in the baby hands discussion.
That is.
I hadn't had one in a couple years.
That is a really interesting thing. I don't know that it matters.
I don't either.
I don't see how that really matters at that position, right? Like, baby hands fumble the football.
I mean, as long as you can punch, you know?
Again, if you have baby hands, to me, you can hide your holding.
Exactly.
Right? So, yeah. But Latham is Latham is worth talking about. There's a couple things about Latham we can talk about coming back.
We'll get into that. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. More of your thoughts on the Titans in the NFL draft coming up next as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Got some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to see the music of Pink Floyd with the Nashville Symphony at Ascend Amphitheater coming up on Sunday, May the 5th. Be caller 3, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, caller 3. We'll win a pair of tickets to the music of Pink Floyd with the Nashville Symphony at Ascend Amphitheater on Sunday, May the 5th. You may even see Joe Rex Road in the crowd somewhere out there.
Hopefully.
Hopefully so. We'll see. See what happens.
Probably not.
Wow.
Forget. That's a good one. That's a
I'm just now thinking of this. He never came back on the show at Mike Vrabel after that.
That's right. Well, he still could.
He could.
He hasn't died.
Probably not.
That's true.
Well, I'll reach out to him.
We'll call him. What's he doing?
I'll reach out to him. Yeah, we should just cold call him. See what the
one week we're going to stink, and this guy sucks, and then I suck.
Yeah, a lot of good Vrabes in there.
I'm going to miss him a little bit, I think. Some good sound clips.
Yeah, we almost need to have a pool on the first day that Brian Callahan snaps at somebody, which, again, it probably
could be a while.
Yeah, it should be a while.
Vrabel would not be a while.
No. I mean, Vrabel's first presser, I think, was like, why are you standing over there? I think he was all weirded out by people being at the press conference.
What are you guys doing here? Why are we here?
Oh, man, that was fun.
What are you doing with your hands, Joe?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a gift that we'll keep on giving. Thank you, Vrabel. We appreciate it.
So J.C. Latham. So I think we've talked some about this, but I want to reiterate. This is really where it gets interesting with him, the whole we think he could move to left tackle, you know, and, I mean, it happens. Usually you see a lot of left tackles in college that just are better suited to right tackle, and, like, you see more of that. You see more left to right from college to pro, I believe. That's not scientific. I don't have a stat on it, but I don't see a ton of – you know, college right tackles who then go on to be NFL left tackles. Does happen. Some people think Latham could be that guy. But here's what Brugler wrote about him. Quote, you know, first of all, you know, his power is definitely something that overmatching his opponents often. He's got some habits that are fixable. But, quote, he's an ascending prospect with the talent to win a starting right tackle job as an NFL rookie, although some teams project him best inside at guard.
Oh, boy.
Now, he's got him ranked as a 13th overall prospect in the draft. I mean, that's
pretty good.
That's pretty good. So, but interesting. So, in Brugler's view, it's right tackle is probably best, but maybe he's a really good guard. Now that's, you know, I know you that's not super exciting for people.
They drafted him and then got through camp and was like, you know what? We feel good about him being a guard.
Yeah.
I'm sure that would go over well around
there. Skoronski, Latham, back-to-back first-round draft picks. And just,
I mean, relatively
you set
high
at guard.
Too. Yeah,
you were set at guard for a long time. So that's, yeah. Two top to top.
Well, as
two
we know,
top 11 picks.
You build from the inside out. Cushenberry, Latham.
That's true.
And then Skoronski.
Who needs tackles if you got guards and a center like that? So, yeah, it just to me it's – I'm with you. Like, left tackle, it feels like that's what should be, you know, if you're picking high, that's what you should be thinking, you know, is left tackle. Now, again, when you talk about the ceiling thing, like, I think Fashanu and Alt would be first day starters at left tackle, and I don't think anybody else would be. But Amarius Mims, I'm going to continue to say that's my if you traded back. And if you believe, because I think Amarius Mims is the type of guy who some people thought he should not have come out. I mean, he, I think he's, what, played eight games or started eight games? Is that right? I think so. But, I mean, you're talking about, you know, almost 6'8", 344, and like a ton of – this is a guy who if he came out a year from now, if he did go back to school, like people say, this might be your clear top of the draft, left tackle, top five pick.
Yep.
I'm not saying he would be, but it kind of projects that way when you look at all of his talent. You know, who's the – there's a quote Brugler has, you know, about his lack of – Someone said this at the combine. Quote, you don't need 1,000 reps when you have his gifts from God.
Yeah.
You know, that's a quote someone had at the combine about Amarius Mims. So this year, yeah, it may not help you much. It's not giving you the, you know, the Levis look you're hoping, the Levis support you're hoping maybe, because if he does start at some, he probably starts at some point, but he probably doesn't start right away and might be a little rough. But a guy with that kind of talent with Bill Callahan, if you moved back, you know, I'm just saying, like, there is still a long-term perspective that you have to take on these things and understand that you're not a contender this year. You're trying to be a playoff team this year. You're trying to give your quarterback the best chance this year. But if you believe he's that guy and that it's just a matter of time and reps and he's going to be like a super, like a star left tackle. Now, that's the guy that is the high ceiling guy that really interests me.
Yeah, I mean, it's really intriguing. His size is, I mean, it's ridiculous, the size that he brings to the table. And if that was the way they went, I'd be curious. But the other part of that is, doesn't he also seem like a guy that would probably be best served in a situation where he doesn't have to play immediately? And I feel like, I mean, he'd have to play here immediately.
Well, that's what's interesting. I mean, maybe to start out the season, that's the thing. It's like if it's not Petit Frere, I don't know.
Who are you putting over there?
I guess it would be Petit Frere. But then who's right tackle?
Well,
and again, you know, they may address that too. I mean, they may draft two tackles here, but if not, I mean, is it like Raidens? Raidens at right, Petit Frere at left. That's how you start the season, and then you're just trying to get Mims going to the point where you can then go Mims left and Petit Frere right. Yeah, I don't know.
What's your reaction
coaches don't like to move things around like that once the season starts?
Speaking of Alabama players, going back to the Latham conversation, what's your reaction if they draft Dallas Turner at number 7? Don't go left tackle, don't go wide receiver, but they go edge rusher and draft Dallas Turner.
Like, that's where, okay, but man, you better be sure he's special. Not just the top edge rusher in this draft. Everybody agrees with that. But is he special? Is he going to come in and just wreck games for you? You know, if that's the case, then I don't hate it. I mean, I know Denard Wilson wouldn't hate it. I mean, you think about what that could mean for this defense. All of a sudden, you're like, wow, if he is that guy and he can come right in along with, like, what you expect you get from Landry, and how much does that help Landry to have a guy like that on the other side? I mean, I don't hate it, but again, is he that guy? Is he a top 7 pick level guy? I'm looking at Brugger on him too. He has the freaky tools to be a potential impact player in the NFL. But again, a potential impact player in the NFL. I want to see the freaky tools and will be an immediate superstar guaranteed. You know, long explosive edge rusher, body twitch, hand usage. And look, just personally, I thought he was good at Alabama.
He's not Will Anderson.
Yeah. Right.
Right. I mean,
it doesn't seem like he is. Yeah. You know, I mean, they turn out so many incredible players there. So I would be a little bit skeptical of that not being a little bit of a reach.
Yeah, I agree. But I mean, then it goes back to as well. Like, I view it this way. I think if you told me right now that they went Adunze or Neighbors and that's who they ended up with at number 7 overall, personally, I would sign up for it right now. I'd say, yeah, cool. That's good. And then hopefully you find a left tackle in the second round and you move on from there. But I also agree that when you're going by just need, like edge rusher to me is more of a need than wide receiver is right now. Left tackle for sure is more of a need than wide receiver is right now. So we talk about, you know, Brock Bowers at tight end, like that would be a luxury pick. Have the Titans reached the point with what they've done in free agency where wide receiver is a luxury pick at number 7 overall? I don't think so, but I think you could make that argument if you're a Titans fan.
Well, yeah, I think if you have – depends on how you define it, but if you have two receivers like they have that are known commodities, one more known than the other but also older than the other, but, yeah, they're going to be good, then I think you can – I guess it just comes down to like how important they view it to have a quote unquote like true slot guy. And also it does come down to the question of just the overall, how they view the rest of the roster after those two guys. I think just with those two guys, some people would say, yes, it's a luxury pick. I mean, plenty of teams, some teams don't have two good receivers. And if you have two good receivers and then just some guys who help out, that's fine. The problem is, you know, again, down the road, Hopkins, he's not going to be here for long. So that's where I would say it's not a luxury pick. And it's also the the question of Burks. I keep getting people sending me, like someone last night tweeted me like some picture of Burks at a car dealership, and it's like he's not out of shape. Like, and of course he tags me and like tags Jared. I guess Jared had some muted tweet that I, you know, don't know what he said. More stuff about Burks. The whole thing is just bizarre at this point. Like, stop stalking people on the internet. But I will say, I looked at this picture, and he just looks like Traylon. It doesn't look any different to me.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't really care about any of that stuff in terms of, like, the in shape, out of shape, trying to determine that from an Instagram photo. Like, that doesn't really – but I just – until proven otherwise, I don't – like, Traylon Burks is not a factor.
Yeah.
He's not.
No, that's –
That's how I view it. I was like, yeah, I mean,
well, I agree.
Like, but like, so many,
unfortunately,
everybody's spending so much time talking about Traylon Burks this offseason. I'm like, guys, why are we doing this? Like,
yeah.
He's not a factor in this offense right now.
Well, that's the thing. So if you believe that there's no way and no chance, then that's another reason that it's not a luxury pick.
Exactly. 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Parkman doing his little shimmy. It drives the women here in Cleveland crazy. Here's the pitch. Parkman swings and drives from the deep left center. It looks like he got it all.
Vaughn into the windup in his first offering. Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed. Ball four. Ball eight. Low, and Vaughn has walked the bases loaded on 12 straight pitches. Boy, how can these guys lay off pitches that close?
I don't know.
Y'all better start saying pop. I'm just telling you, okay? Taking over, baby.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. Keezer, that may have been your finest work to this point. I love me some Major League. Anytime I can hear Bob Uecker from those movies, I'm cool with it, man.
Yep.
It's good
Mr.
stuff.
Mr. Belvedere, for anybody out there who,
oh, yeah,
who celebrates Mr. Belvedere. Underrated sitcom, Mr. Bob
How
Uecker.
Can these guys lay off those pitches? great movies.
Well, that as that intro may have told you, we're going to talk a little baseball today. You know, Steve Cavanis from the Nashville Banner got John Lohr on the phone, or maybe it was an in-person interview, but I thought this was a good time to just have the occasional, why are we still talking about Major League Baseball in Nashville discussion? So a couple things here that I don't believe. John Lohr, who has been here like for decades, it feels like, telling us we're going to get Major League Baseball. A couple things. In reality, it's been, what, 5-6 years now, right? 5 years?
I think so, yeah.
A couple things. One is he confirmed to Steve that basically like the whole plan previously – again, maybe this was somewhere – I had not seen this expressed explicitly by John Lohr, but basically the plan was like hoping that Tampa Bay was going to come here. Now, there was a lot of talk about that, a lot of speculation, things like that, but, you know – that was sort of – it feels like that was sort of the hope and the plan, and then it's sort of like, okay, what's plan B? And, you know, plan B continues to just be plan billionaire. And, again, as he said here, as we've talked about a million times, as Steve gets him on the record, it's like, I mean, you're trying to – you need money, and you're hoping – you know, you're hoping to have money. Let me see if I can find the quote from the comments. Like, you know, you're talking to different people. You got some ideas. He said, you know, securing an owner is, quote, a strong priority this year. They're looking locally. They're looking at minority owners at other clubs, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's the same thing.
It's like, good to know it's a priority. It's
right. Yeah.
Somewhat important moving forward.
It's amazing. You know, look, good for them. Good for him, I guess, for like, continuing to like, if they had a heck of a stretch of like making news, they had different people chiming and chipping in and things like that, but it's always been the same question. It is again here. It's just, what, tell me who is going to foot this bill, because again, not only do you have, you know, the fee, but you have, like, you're going to have to privately finance this ballpark, wherever it may go. Like, there's no appetite for a cent devoted to another project with public money. So not only do you have to have the money to do all the things to, you know, to own a baseball team, but also you're gonna have to build a stadium on your own.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Like, we're not getting baseball. I'm not saying never. Like, I cannot say never, but it's not anywhere on
this comes up every year.
Remotely near the horizon.
Like, right when it's right around like MLB winter meeting times when it comes up of, Nashville's probably not that far away from getting a baseball team, right? Like, the MLB wants to expand to Nashville. Yeah. I'm like, well, look, I have no doubt that the MLB probably does want to expand to Nashville. But who is going to pay for it? That's always what it comes back to. And I tweeted this a few months ago back when this conversation went back up. I said, until that part of the equation is solved, this entire discussion is a waste of time, right? Like, until we find out who is going to be the owner of the team that pays for the day-to-day operations of running a Major League Baseball team, and to your point, which is a great point, about the stadium, then there's no baseball coming here. Like, I have no problem with the original plan being, well, maybe a team could move. Like, maybe the Rays, but the Rays aren't going anywhere. And the A's are, but they're going to Vegas. So, like,
they got an awesome plan going on there, that whole deal.
Exactly. Yeah, they do. So, what is, like, the relocation part of it doesn't feel like there's anything that's imminent there at this point. So, like, who is going to end up being the billionaire that pays for all this is still the main problem to figure out, and that's a problem that they have not come close to figuring out yet.
And Cavendish, who, by the way, we should give him props because the pepperoni and hot honey pizza that Nick Kieser bought us, what is that? That's straight from a Cavendish piece, by the way. So shout out to Steve Cavendish. But
straight
he also
gas.
That was pretty awesome, right? But he also talking to in this interview in the banner talking to Laura about again the whole the whole fact that there is a baseball team here, the whole sounds thing and the idea of coexisting, and Laura says he's hoping that could potentially be the the feeder club. Yeah, be great.
Makes sense.
I imagine that if that were the case in the same city, though.
Call somebody up, take a pedal tavern over to the exactly. Come on down here, bud. Need you to play tonight.
You expense that $5 Uber. Yeah, come on over. I mean, how weird would that be, though?
I mean,
that can't happen.
It's hard to imagine that working.
And again, there's still debt, load there on their stadium. I mean,
it's just it feels like every year, though, it's like, so when's baseball coming to Nashville? I'm like, who's paying for it? As I still go back to what I said earlier, go get Dolly Parton involved. Get Dolly. Dolly, come in here and save it.
Well,
it would take her probably plus multiple other people, but make her a part of it.
A few years ago when they came in here, I think since I've been at the Athletic, I did like this long interview with John Lohr and Dave Dombrowski.
Yeah.
And like, I never wrote anything because I was just like, because it was kept coming back to that question of like money. And it's just like, I don't know. But one thing Cavendish writes here too, to keep in mind, Metro still has $80 million in principal and interest left on the bond debt for First Horizon.
Yeah.
So it's just, I thought, but back then when they started, I thought, okay, maybe the Haslams.
Yeah.
That just was an obvious.
And now he's about to
source of billionaires. But they've gone. Yeah.
I mean, Governor Haslam's gone in a different direction. Too, but I mean,
well,
just own up all of them.
I suppose.
Get Amy. Hey, does Amy want to own a baseball team?
Amy and, maybe. I mean, actually, I like your Dolly Parton.
Now, wait a minute. How many games do they play? 81 at home? Do I have to be at all this?
That's a lot of flying back and forth, man, from Houston.
They got Southwest points for that? Oh, my goodness. That's good a lot Lord. Of games.
Maybe we're on to something. Amy Dolly partnership.
There you go. I mean, we do have a lot of we have a lot of rich people who just live here randomly.
Yeah.
Like, what about Timberlake chipped in here? Is Timberlake a billionaire?
I doubt it.
No?
I don't think so.
How about T. Swift? How about your old classmate?
She's got to be.
What about T. Swift getting in on this?
No.
No, not a billionaire? No.
I bet she's
going to be a billionaire soon. Right?
I bet she's pretty close.
Taylor?
Get in there.
T. Swift, Dolly Parton.
You can put the park in Hendersonville.
T. Swift, Dolly Parton, like joint ownership? That'd be pretty freaking awesome.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7. A lot happening right now with the Tennessee Volunteers, both in baseball, basketball, and a somewhat key transfer yesterday hitting the portal in football as well. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.